Tane's desk was half inside the shield, and an open inkwell sat at one corner. He put his back against the wood, tried to look like he was backing away in fear. It wasn't a hard act to sell in that moment. Behind his back, he palmed the inkwell, slipped it into his trouser pocket. His clothes had always been shabby. He didn't have much trouble tearing apart one of the pocket seams with his finger, just enough to leave a small hole in the bottom corner. Again, the mask pounded against the shield. This time, the silver barrier flickered and failed. It hadn't had long left either way. The mask closed the distance, grasping for Tane with one armored hand. Tane upended the inkwell in his pocket, felt ink running down his leg. A heavy hand closed around his arm, and his consciousness fell away. Chapter 19. It was evening when Kadka emerged from the abandoned maintenance tunnels, not long past dusk. The alley was deep in shadow. Dark always fell hard over Port Haven's narrow streets. It wasn't a problem for her orcish eyes, but there were other things distracting her tonight. Not what she'd learned about the mask. There hadn't been much of that. A few possible half-glimpses that didn't add up to a discernible pattern. Worth following up, considering how few other leads they had, but she didn't think it would come to anything. No, what Kadka couldn't put out of her head was how many of the Silver Dawn's agents had looked at her like she meant something, beyond just muscle or intimidation, and not just the so-called lesser races. There had been kobolds and goblins and another orc woman, full-blooded, like Vladak. But a number of humans and dwarves and gnomes had answered Iskar's call as well. There had even been an ogryn and a pair of enthusiastic sprites. All those people, stepping up to fight against something that she'd simply tried to ignore since she'd come to Thalas, and they looked at her like she could do something about it that they couldn't. Maybe she wasn't a citizen, but it was getting harder not to see it as her fight. Absorbed in her thoughts, she didn't notice the door until she reached for the handle. It was already open. Just a crack, but that was enough to raise her hackles and clear her mind. There was no chance Carver had forgotten, not with the mask still out there. Kadka drew the long knife from behind her back and inched the door open with her foot, peeking into the darkness. The office looked empty, and her night vision didn't pick up any sign of movement. She pushed the door open the rest of the way and crept inside. A quick search found nobody hiding under the desk or behind the folding screen at the back, but a childhood spent learning to hunt in Sverna had taught Kadka to read tracks and signs, and there were two signs here she couldn't ignore. First, a splintered hole punched through the wooden folding screen, the size of an Ancrist pistol ball, she estimated. And second, a coin-sized pool of fluid at the foot of the desk that she feared at first was blood in the colorless tones of her dark sight. Her nose quickly corrected her when she bent closer. Ink. Someone had fired an Ancrist pistol, and Carver's inkwell had been spilled. The pistol shot might have come from an attacker, or from Indri if she'd been there. It wasn't out of place at the scene of a struggle. Kadka could account for it. It was the ink that bothered her. There wasn't enough of it, for one thing. If the inkwell had just been tipped off the desk, there should have been more. And where was the bottle? She crouched to look under the desk again, peeked behind the screen, checked every corner of the room. Nothing. But there was another droplet of ink on the floor just inside the door. And that was when she knew. Carver had been taken. The ink hadn't been spilled by accident. Someone had come for him, and he'd somehow secreted the bottle on his person to leave a trail. It was a leap, but it was just the sort of thing he would have done. She was certain of it. He'd been taken just when she hadn't been there to protect him. She should have been, but she hadn't. And a sick weight settled in Kadka's stomach when she realized just who was responsible for that. No. She pushed the suspicion aside. Follow the trail first, and then she'd know more. She raced out the door, skidded to a halt in the street, looked both ways. There, a spattering of dark ink stains leading up the right side of the road. Kadka followed. Carver must have been carrying the inkwell in his pocket, letting the ink filter through the fabric of his clothes to keep it from draining all at once. Still, though, it wouldn't last forever. The trail didn't continue far up the road, and she worried the ink had run out too soon, or that whoever had taken Carver had noticed it. But a quick circle found the next dab on the ground to her right. It led into the alley she'd met Vladak in earlier, toward the abandoned maintenance tunnels. She hadn't noticed the ink spots on her way back, had been too distracted to notice much of anything, but there they were, and she didn't like what that suggested. She followed the trail, a drop here and there leading her along nearly the same route Vladak had. Another splatter just before the metal plate that covered the access to the tunnels. She passed by, checked further down, hoping, but there was nothing. Kadka returned to the plate, knelt, and heaved it aside. A dark smear ran down one side of the ladder, ending just below the second rung. This was the way, then, no doubting it now. At the bottom of the ladder, the ink spots led her down the passage opposite the one she and Vladak had taken before, and she followed the trail through dark tunnels. Here and there, she had to check down several passages before she found another droplet, and they were thinning out, getting further between. And then, after perhaps a quarter hour, she lost the trail altogether, but not because the ink ran out. There was a dark splatter on the floor in front of her, a clear sign that Carver had been taken this way, but it was a dead end. The passage terminated in a solid wall. "Dishka!" she cursed, and slammed a fist against the brick. She didn't think they'd doubled back. Maybe, but she hadn't seen any signs in other directions. No, it had to be a secret way, like the ones the Silver Dawn used. Kadka started prodding bricks at random, twisting bolts on the steel supports, but she had no idea where to start. And even if she got lucky here, there could well be other closed passages waiting ahead. But there was someone who might know the way. And if he didn't have the answers she wanted... Her fingers clenched around her knife, and she turned back the way she'd come. Another thing she learned in this Vernon wilderness was an unerring sense of direction. She remembered the way Vladak had taken her easily enough, traced the route back to the hidden passage, turned the wheel on the sealed hatch, prodded the brick that popped out with her foot. The low door swung open, and Kadka ducked through into the great, sealed disk tunnel. Iskar was still inside, bent over some papers on a desk at the center of the tunnel, silver wings folded at his back. Alone, just like she'd left him. The others hadn't stayed, only come to report and meet Kadka, and then gone on their way. He looked up when she entered, and revealed draconian teeth and an open-snouted smile. "Kadka, what brings you?" She crossed the distance in an instant, knife in hand, grabbed him by the throat, lifted him from his seat.
"Carver is gone. Someone takes him into these tunnels while I am with you. Where is he?"
Iskar didn't struggle, though the muscle beneath those silver scales might have been a match for her. He didn't even flinch, just looked at her steadily with those luminous blue eyes.
"I don't know. I swear to you, I had nothing to do with it."
Kadka tightened her grip, pressed the point of her knife against his ribs.
"Who else knows I will be gone? And you keep me here, meeting people, longer than I mean to stay. Carver says I trust you too easily, and now he is gone, when I should have..."
"Mr. Carver must have had defenses on the office."
Somehow Iskar remained calm, though his voice wheezed through a half-closed throat.
"Wards, how would one of us get in, and why?"
That was true. Carver didn't always have the office wards up, but he'd been paranoid about the mask of late. He wouldn't have made himself easy to take. But if the Knights of the Emperor had infiltrated the Silver Dawn...
"Mask walks through wards before. Maybe Carver's too. Maybe you send him."
She relaxed her fingers slightly to let Iskar answer.
"And let you go, after showing you the way to find me? I understand that you're worried for your friend, but think clearly about this. Would I have betrayed you, and then waited here alone, unguarded? I don't know anything about the mask, Kadka. I'm not the one you're looking for. But I can help you. I know these tunnels."
He was making sense, and she still wanted to trust him, wanted to believe she hadn't been completely fooled by the man who had taken her friend.
"I..."
She released him, pulled back her blade.
"I am sorry. It's only... I should be with him when mess comes, not here. Say some things before I go.
She swallowed, shook her head.
Shouldn't be last things I say to him. Please, help me. I will join Silver Dawn. Do what you ask. Anything. Just help.
Iskar shook his head and put a hand on her shoulder. No bargains. Not while you fear for Mr. Carver's life. That is not our way. If you join us, it will be your choice, made freely. Right now, just tell me what you need. Katka didn't waste time. She could thank him properly later.
Trail leads to dead end. Is secret door, I think, but I can't open.
If there is a door down here, I know it, said Iskar, and started for the exit. Come, let us find your friend. Chapter 20 Tane woke with his head in Endri's lap. She was leaning over him, a look of concern on her face. The room behind her was hazy, and he blinked his eyes, trying to clear them. The floor was hard and cold against his back, and something thick and sticky was drying against his leg. For a terrifying moment he feared it was blood, and then he remembered the inkwell in his pocket.
Tane? Thank the Astra you're awake.
He sat up from her lap. His head spun, but he propped himself up on one arm and managed to keep from collapsing to the ground again. Glancing down, he saw the black stain down the outside of his right leg where the ink had drained. Astra, I hope that gave Katka something to work with. How long has it been? He asked.
I don't know, said Endri. Long enough to get us wherever we are. That gauntlet had 100 times the kick of the average day's wand.
Which wouldn't be cheap. Day's wands channeled pure astral energy through the targets linked to the Astra. They ran through gems quickly, and that was for just a few moments' incapacitation. Apparently the mass can afford to burn a lot of power. Something prickled at the back of Tane's mind there. Not quite clear yet, but enough to set a weight rolling in the pit of his stomach. As his vision resolved, he saw that they were in a cell of some kind. Bare brick and stone with a metal door. A sliding plate was mounted in the door at eye level. It was closed. There were no windows to the outside. They were prisoners, and he couldn't see a way out. But they were still alive. That was something. He got shakily to his feet. We have to get out of here. The mass could be going after Failure Audlian already. Indri stood, too.
Believe it or not, I arrived at that conclusion without your help, but I don't see how.
Do you know where we are?
I only woke up a few minutes before you did. All I've seen is the inside of this cell.
What about magic? Can you do anything? Indri shook her head.
I tried. The cell is magically isolated, like the ones at Stookton Yard. I'm cut off from the Astra.
Tane moved to the door, slid open the metal plate, and peered into the room beyond. It didn't reveal much. There were no particular distinguishing features to identify their location. To his right, a set of stairs led to an upper level, and across the room a plain wooden door went somewhere he couldn't guess. For all he knew, it was a storage closet.
Hey! He shouted through the small opening. Can anyone hear me? We need help!
Do you really think it's going to be that easy?
Endri asked from just behind. He shrugged. Worth a try.
Hey, anybody?
Quiet in there!
A man's voice from just to the right of the door. A figure stepped into view. Average height, muscular, probably human, but his face was covered in a black cowl like an executioner's mask. He was dressed all in black, too, with a badge at his breast. A gold crown and staff on a deep purple field. The sigil of the Knights of the Emperor. Tane had seen this before. The same outfit and badge Randolph Kranst and his followers had worn. Men and women gathered by Chancellor Nieris in his plot to bring down the airship Hesliar. So there are more of them. Nieris wasn't lying about that.
There's no point yelling, the man said gruffly. The basement is sound damped. No noise in or out, for the likes of you, anyway.
Presumably the guards were exempted from the spell. They wouldn't be much use if they couldn't hear someone coming.
What are you going to do with us? Tane asked. Why are we here? No point wasting your breath on questions. There's no saving you now. Enemies of the Emperor are dealt with by his mask, and he isn't known for mercy.
There was a grim satisfaction in the guard's voice that Tane very much didn't like. But he didn't let it stop him.
So the mask is just an enforcer. Who is this emperor?
That isn't for the likes of you or me, filth. The unworthy don't look upon the emperor. It's enough that the mask speaks with his voice. Shut your mouth.
You mean none of you have seen them? You don't know who they are?
Again, that uncomfortable prickling in the back of Tane's thoughts. There was something there, something he hadn't quite grasped yet.
You're fighting for someone without even...
I said shut up!
The man uttered a short spell in the lingua. Apparently he was exempt from the astral isolation, too, and a sudden silver force shoved Tane away from the door. He landed painfully on his back against the cold stone floor. The guard peered in through the opening in the door.
The next time you open this, it will go much worse for you, he said coldly, and slid the plate closed.
Indri rushed to Tane's side.
Are you hurt?
Probably bruised my tailbone, but I'm fine. Tane got to his feet again with her help.
So, we're prisoners of the Knights of the Emperor, said Indri, an organization most people don't think exists, and no one will be looking for us. I didn't tell Darren where I was, for obvious reasons. I'm not sure how we get out of this.
There's Kadka, said Tane. She'll be looking.
Will she? You said you argued with her that she might not want to see you. We don't even know if she was going to come back to your office.
She'll come, Tane said, and he believed it. I once made the mistake of thinking she wouldn't, and then she climbed over the side of an airship hundreds of feet above the ground and saved my life. She'll find us. Indri prodded her cheek with her tongue and then nodded.
I wouldn't count her out yet, I suppose.
There's something else, though, said Tane. Why are we even alive for her to find? If the mask wanted to deal with us, why not kill us at the office? It must have to do with luring us into the investigation to begin with. And how in the Astra could someone have gotten through my wards?
The mask got through the wards on several Senate houses, said Indri. You think yours are better?
Yes, Tane said without hesitation. We had a list of people who were exempted from the wards at those estates. My exemptions are me, you, and Kadka, no one else. Which means we're looking at someone who's found a way to actually ignore a ward, not just to get on the list. You'd have to be dead already, or at least appear non-sentient to the Astra. And then the prickling idea that had been forming at the back of his thoughts took shape all at once.
Spellfire, no.
Indri raised an eyebrow.
What?
Before she could finish, shackles of silver-blue energy shimmered into existence around their wrists and ankles and yanked both of them hard toward the rear of the cell. Tane struggled against it, but in an instant, his back was against the wall, his limbs pinned. The door swung open, and a figure close to 9 feet tall stooped to pass through, draped from head to foot in a black robe. It had no face. Only a mouthless brass mask with slits for eyes and a crowned staff etched down the center. The mask turned back to the guard at the cell door.
Leave us.
The voice was deep and distorted, the same one from the illusory messages at the murder scenes. Before the man could respond, a massive brass gauntleted hand pushed the door closed. The giant figure stood alone before Tane and Indri and looked them up and down. Narrow eye slits glowing faintly from behind with silver-blue light.
Tane Carver, a pleasure to finally meet you properly.
Tane held his chin up, tried not to let his voice shake.
We've met. Or at least, I've met the man speaking through the mask. Or do you prefer the Emperor who will be?
The mask only regarded Tane silently, but Indri twisted her neck to look at him.
What are you talking about?
And Tane knew as he said it aloud that he was right. It was the only thing that made sense. There's only one way to get through all those wards and detection spells, including mine. The same reason we needed the crawlers to get access to the Audlian estate. The mask isn't a sentient being, Rhee. It's an automaton, a golem. And only one man could make a golem this advanced. Indri's eyes widened with realization.
Endo!
And finally the mask spoke again in that rumbling, distorted voice.
Very good, Tane.
One hand reached up, palmed the delicately etched mask, pulled it free. Behind,
two silver-blue lenses like eyes glowed in the center of a brass faceplate. Metallic irises contracted to adjust for the new light, just like Endo's crawlers. "Well," said Tane, "I suppose this means I'm not getting paid."
Chapter 21 "Tell me," Endo said, in the mask's deep, warped voice. "What gave me away? I would like to know what mistake sentenced you to death."
If someone had told Tane 10 years ago that one day he would feel so betrayed by Endo Stuck, he wasn't sure if he would have laughed or flown into a rage. And yet here he was. He'd fallen for the act, even started to feel some kinship toward the earnest, brilliant young man. "I can't believe I let him fool me. A decade hating him wasted just because he looked at me wide-eyed and told me how clever I am." But whatever he felt, it could wait. Right now, he needed to stall for time. "Hurry, Khadka. I'm not ready to die just yet." Tane's hands trembled against their shackles, but he kept his voice steady. There were plenty of clues. The way the mask passed through wards, the lack of astral trace at the scenes, the artifacts built with no regard to cost, like your chair and your crawlers, disappearing with active illusion, the way only a gnome could, or maybe a golem with a gnome in control. I should have seen it sooner. But I didn't, not until I learned that no one had ever seen the Emperor in person. That's when things started falling into place. Your followers aren't the most accepting sort. They wouldn't take you seriously if they'd seen you in your chair. So you made yourself a stand-in.
"A disappointing necessity," Endo said. "If I was going to recruit men like Talayn Nieris, I needed a guise. They would never have followed someone so young, someone they saw as limited. As the mask, my reach has grown greatly. You would be surprised at some of the men and women who count themselves knights of the Emperor."
"But why?" Endri demanded. "Why do all this? You killed your own brother."
There was no emotion in the automaton's blue lenses, and the voice was too distorted to read.
"Who would believe I was the killer, with him as the first victim? My brother was a necessary sacrifice. The world is out of order. The magical have surrendered too much of their rightful power. That must be remedied."
"That's it?" Tane said. "You're just a true believer?" He didn't buy it. He couldn't help but notice that although Indri was right there beside him, the mask barely spared her a glance. "This feels more personal than he wants to let on. Can I use that?" He couldn't be sure yet. He had to keep playing things out. "Then why drag me and Khadka into this? Why all the taunts?" The automaton replaced its mask, adjusted it, and then looked at Tane again through narrow eye slits.
"You killed Talayn Nieris, in every way that matters, at least. A great man who devoted everything to the cause, and you stripped him of his mind and his magic. And in doing so, the two of you became a symbol to the non-magical, making them believe they might stand up to their betters. I couldn't allow that."
Tane shook his head. "No, not that. That part is obvious enough. But why not just kill us? You could have walked through my wards at any time. Why lure us into investigating?"
"Killing you might have made you martyrs," said Endo. "That was never my intent. I wanted Thallus to see you fail. I wanted you humiliated, not dead. And I must admit, there was a certain appeal to besting the son of the man who took my legs."
That was something, a hint of motivation beyond dispassionate plotting. And he's still answering questions. Why? It feels like boasting. He wants me to know how he beat me. Which made it easier to stall for time, at least. "So you mentioned us in your messages, knowing we'd get involved." Tane paused, remembering. "And it was you who first nudged us toward Deepweld, wasn't it? You meant for us to see you there that night."
"Yes. I knew that the automaton's size and the names on the list of ward exemptions would lead to Noanna Uthar."
"And her sudden shift in the Senate?" said Tane. "You were the one blackmailing her, setting up a lead for us to follow. Her secret made her look guilty, an easy scapegoat."
"But not as easy as I expected."
It was hard to distinguish tone behind the automaton's uncanny voice, but there might have been a hint of respect there.
I'll grant you that much. I thought you would find the evidence against Uthar and stop there. When the next victim died, all of Thallus would have seen your failure. Their precious magebreakers accuse the wrong woman, a senator no less, and the real killer strikes again when no one expects it. Your reputations would have been suitably ruined. But you didn't take the bait. I hadn't anticipated that you would speak to Talayn, or that he would give you something useful out of that smoldering ruin of a mind.
All of this just to discredit Tain and Khadka? Indri said incredulously. You're insane. How could that possibly be worth it?
A low, distorted chuckle through the mouthless mask.
You misunderstand, Inspector Lovial. Destroying the Magebreakers was a happy confluence of events, but I had much larger goals. Operating in the shadows is fine and well, but there are limits to the influence one can attain that way. My knights and I are ready to step into the light. Eliminating these magicless pretenders to the throne is a fine way for an emperor to announce himself, don't you think? Already I have the Senate discussing changes to their outdated restrictions on the Protector's office, and when I kill the first elvish candidate in centuries, it will serve as a signal to the right-minded that our time has come. Speaking of which, I have an appointment at the Audlian estate that I cannot miss.
The mask turned to Tain once more.
A shame it came to this. I would have let you go when it was over. As I said, I only wanted you shamed. Alive or dead is immaterial. But now you know too much.
Then do it, Tain said defiantly, and prayed to the Astra that he'd read the situation correctly.
He won't end it now. He's got something to prove. I hope. Don't you think you've taunted me enough?
Endo regarded him for a long moment with the mask's eyes, and then shook his head.
No, not yet, I think. I want you alive when I kill Failure Audlian. I want you to know how badly you've been beaten before you die.
The huge automaton turned toward the door and pulled it open. Before leaving, those silver-blue eye slits turned back one last time.
But I won't keep you waiting very long.
Chapter 22 Khadka led the way, following an ever-fainter trail of ink spots through darkened passages. Whenever they came to a dead end, Iskar let them through by twisting a bolt or pressing a brick or some other trigger. True to his word, he knew the secrets of the tunnels, and there was no shortage of them. Gradually, the ink marks became scarcer and farther between. Khadka had to choose which path to take at some forks by gauging what dust and debris seemed most recently stirred, or sometimes just by guessing. They doubled back more than once, but inevitably, no matter how far between, she would find another drop or smudge of ink, however small. That made little sense to her. The mask, if it was the mask who had taken Carver, had to be able to see in the dark, and no one could miss a growing ink stain forever. How had it not been noticed sooner? After more than an hour, they came to another dead end, an apparently unfinished passage. The brick walls ended in ragged edges, giving way to raw stone. Somewhere under the far edge of Stookton, if she'd judged the distance and direction properly, and she rarely got such things wrong.
"Head to go through here," she said over her shoulder to Iskar.
There was no ink, but she'd passed a small droplet a short way back, and there hadn't been a fork in the tunnel since.
"Open it."
Iskar frowned, and his silver tail slapped against the floor.
What?
Khadka turned fully around to face him.
Is problem? We need to move fast. Carver is in trouble.
I don't know that there is a way through. I'm not aware of any passage here. If there is, it wouldn't go through the stone, but maybe...
He moved a silver-clawed hand along the brick wall to one side, then the other, tapped with the back of his knuckles at a few points. Finally, he shook his head.
I don't know, Khadka. I'm sorry.
There is a door. Must be.
Khadka pushed past him, started prodding bricks with her fingers.
Is no other way.
Maybe they took a wrong turn. Doubled back?
Iskar suggested. She shook her head.
No, no sign of it, and never did before. Must be here. Must be.
She balled up her fists and slammed them against the wall. Fragments of old brick crumbled away, but no door opened.
Only used passages you know before. If you don't know this, must be end of trail. Mask's hideout. Carver is in there. We need to get in.
Iskar put a hand on her shoulder.
Kathka, I don't think...
A sound came from behind, brick grating against brick. Kathka put a finger to her lips, spun to face the other wall. A narrow line of light appeared there, zigzagging between bricks and growing wider. Kathka grabbed Iskar's wrist and rushed down the hall, ducking around the next corner. She yanked Iskar against the wall with her, and they both pressed their backs against the brick. Moments later, a massive shadow stepped into the fork in the tunnels. A dark robe covered its body, but it was some 9 feet tall. The mask. Kathka held her breath. If she'd picked the wrong passage, if the mask turned their way, her chances of getting to Carver fell substantially. Instead, the figure turned in the other direction, moving away from them into the dark. As soon as the mask was out of earshot, and she knew she was cutting it close, Kathka sprinted back down the tunnel. The brick had sealed shut once more.
Bishka!
She swore. Taking a step back, she hurled herself shoulder first at the wall, ignored the pain of the impact, and did it again.
Kathka!
Iskar caught up with her, grabbed her by the shoulders.
You'll only hurt yourself.
She struggled against his grip. He was nearly as strong as she was.
Carver needs help. Can't stop.
Then we need to find another way,
Iskar insisted.
You're no good to him with a broken shoulder.
Kathka relented, stopped fighting him.
What other way?
He sighed.
That I don't know. I could keep searching for a trigger, but that could take time Mr. Carver might not have, and we can't simply knock on the front door. I wish I could be more used to you.
But something he'd said perked Kathka's ears.
Maybe we do go in front door.
What do you mean?
She was already moving back down the hall. There'd been a hatchway to the surface a short way beyond the last fork.
Stukton is above, and the main disk lines far that way.
They were crossing the fork now, and she gestured down the passage to her right, where they'd hidden from the mask.
So, passage must go to basement somewhere. Just need to find what basement.
She reached the ladder to the surface, started to climb.
And I am good at directions.
Iskar hesitated.
Kathka, I'm not sure I should. Someone might see.
Kathka paused on the ladder to look down at him.
No one will see. It's late and dark. Please. Might need more strength than I have alone. I know you have secrets that make you hide. It's not for me to ask. But are they worth Carver's life?
Iskar looked up at her for a long moment, and then...
No. I don't believe they are.
He grasped the rung above his head and started up. There was no one in sight when she emerged. It was late enough that the alley and the surrounding streets were deserted. She'd been right in her estimate of their location. They were at the far side of Stukton, very near the Griffin's Roost. Kathka hurried along the streets, tracing the lines of the maintenance tunnels in her head. It was only a few blocks to the spot. A windowless storehouse among several others like it at the very edge of the district.
Here,
she said.
This is place.
A single door led into the building. She tried the handle. Locked.
How are you going to get through that?
Iskar approached from behind.
Door isn't problem, said
Kathka. Carver had taught her that. In a city of magic, no one relied on physical security.
Between two of us should be strong enough. Problem will be ward behind it.
That she had no solution for. Iskar took a deep breath.
I can deal with the wards.
Kathka cocked her head.
Thought you had no magic.
I don't. I have... It's difficult to explain, Kathka, but I can get you through any ward you might face.
Good. Help me with door.
Iskar grabbed her shoulder before she could turn away.
Wait. I cannot help you fight if it comes to that. I will not harm anyone. I hope I can explain it to you in a way that you will understand one day, but there is no time now. Please believe that I have good reason.
There wasn't time to ask more. She either trusted him or she didn't, and she decided in that moment that she did.
He's fine. Just get me in.
No hesitation at all.
Something glimmered in Iskar's bright blue eyes. Admiration, maybe.
If we are dealing with the Knights of the Emperor, there will almost certainly be mages on the other side of the door, but you would face them alone.
Carver is not perfect, but he is my friend. Maybe best one I have. If he needs me, I come. Always.
She beckoned him forward.
No more talk. On three, we kick.
Iskar just nodded and moved into position beside her.
One, two, three.
With a great crack, the door slammed inward under their feet. It opened into a curiously empty storehouse. A staircase descended into the basement on one side of the room, and in the opposite corner across a mostly bare floor sat a stack of chairs and several folding cots. Two of those cots were already laid out, though, and occupied. The figures in them stirred at the noise and started to rise. Instinctively, Khadka stepped forward and met an invisible wall. A ward, just as she'd expected.
Quickly,
she said. She drew her long knife from behind her back, dropped a shorter blade from her sleeve into her empty palm with a flick of the wrist.
Move aside, said Iskar, and centered himself before the door.
He breathed deep, and then deeper still. His bare silver chest swelled, and then he opened his jaws wide and exhaled with a terrible roar. White-hot flame gushed in a torrent from his mouth. The fire spilled forth so bright that Khadka could hardly bear to look, rolling against the invisible ward like a great wave. Even from behind Iskar, the heat was almost unbearable. She took a step back to escape the pain on her bare face. This was dragon fire. She knew it without doubt. Not a sad lick of flame like Sivisk had breathed at her, but true dragon fire, the kind so many kobolds boasted of, but none possessed. Or at least she'd assumed none did, until now. She didn't know how he was doing it, what truth lay behind his evasiveness and secrecy, but just then she didn't care. All that mattered was that he was breathing dragon fire, and it was better than anything she'd ever seen. Better than magic. Or at the very least, stronger. Silver-blue light flared in the empty air across the doorway as the ward struggled against the white of the flame, and then Khadka felt something shatter, as if she could hear crystal breaking, but without any true sound.
Go,
Iskar panted as the flames died in his mouth. He bent, bracing his hands on his knees.
The way is clear.
But Khadka was already moving. She'd felt the magic break, and that was all she needed. The ward had stopped the flame from catching inside, but the outer doorway was still smoldering, uncomfortably hot to pass through. It didn't matter. She was through before Iskar finished speaking. Two figures in black executioner's masks stood to face her, clearly hesitant to get any nearer the source of the white flame. One had retrieved an Ankrist pistol from somewhere, and the other was already chanting magic words. A third was just emerging from the stairwell to join them.
Only three?
Khadka felt the corners of her mouth rising.
You should have taken someone else's friend.
She met them grinning, knives in hand. Tain heard the guard leave, but he didn't know why. There were only footsteps rapidly climbing the stairs, and then nothing. Nothing made it in past the sound-damping spell on the basement. He rushed to the small window in the door, slid the metal plate aside. No one was there. They'd been left alone.
Something's happening, he said.
Could just be changing shifts, said Indri.
I don't think so. He sounded like he was in a hurry.
Indri moved to stand beside him and took his hand. Neither of them had to say why. It had been near an hour since Endo's automaton had left them there. Tain didn't know who was upstairs, but if the mask had returned, they didn't have long left.
I'm sorry, Tain.
Indri's voice was quiet and sad.
This is my fault. If I hadn't talked you out of going to the Audlians, because of me, we basically walked right up to the Mask's door and told him we knew what he was planning.
He squeezed her hand.
You did the best you could with what you knew. And even if we had gone straight to the Audlian estate, we didn't have the resources to help them very much. We'd probably have ended up asking Endo for his crawlers either way. Which was entirely my idea, by the way, so save some blame from me if that's what we're doing.
Right, I forgot. I guess it's all your fault then.
Indri offered him a shallow smile.
I'm not sure that makes me feel much better, but thank you for trying.
A sound came from the top of the stairs, a door creaking open inside the sound-damping spell. A heavy footfall, and then another. Someone large. It was easier to look at Endri than to just wait for the end, so he did. We never did get that dinner, he said. Indri gave him a sad smile.
I wouldn't have waited if I thought we'd run out of time.
There was too much to say. Too many regrets. Too many things he'd done wrong. He took a step towards her, still holding her hand in his, looked into those amber eyes that he'd missed for so long, and wished to the Astra that he'd been smart enough not to leave.
Rhi, if this is it...
I know.
She moved to meet him, and then her body was against his. Their lips met. Tane grabbed her by the waist and pulled her as close as he could. Her arms were around his neck, clinging just as urgently as he was.
Spellfire, I missed this. I missed her.
Together they tried to stretch the moment as long as they could, tried to ignore what was coming. It didn't last. The cell door swung open. Tane squeezed his eyes shut and held Indri tight. A familiar laugh came from the doorway.
Wouldn't hurry if I know you two are having so much fun.
Tane's eyes snapped open and he looked to see Kadka standing just outside the cell, a broad, toothy grin stretched across her face.
Kadka!
His face flushed red, and he and Indri separated abruptly, avoiding each other's eyes. Tane crossed the room and threw his arms around Kadka's broad shoulders.
I knew you'd come! I knew it!
He's not lying, said Indri, exiting the cell behind him. He was annoyingly sure of it, really.
She clapped Kadka on the arm.
I'll admit, I wasn't so convinced, but I've never been so happy to be wrong.
But how did you get in? Tane asked, finally releasing her. There had to be wards on the place.
Iskar!
Kadka nodded over her shoulder. Behind her, the tallest kobold Tane had ever seen rounded the bottom of the stairs, bare-chested and silver-scaled.
He breathes fire, breaks the spell. Couldn't have found you without him.
She looked at Tane with a glint of defiance in her eyes, her thick jaw thrust out stubbornly, making a point. Tane raised his hands in surrender.
Kadka, I'm sorry. Everything I said last night, I should have just listened to you. You see things more clearly than I do most of the time. You're so much more than just the muscle.
Kadka relaxed her jaw and smiled.
I know. But it's nice to hear you say so.
Tane looked to Iskar then, as the muscular kobold drew near.
I don't know if you know this, but I owe you an apology too. I misjudged you without ever meeting you, even when Kadka told me you could be trusted. I'm sorry. Thank you for helping us.
There was something curious in Kadka's story, though, and he just couldn't help himself. But you breathed fire on the wards and they broke? I've read legends that say dragonfire can break wards and shields, but even if that's true, kobold fire is usually a bit less impressive. Although if any kobold had ever truly looked like a descendant of dragons, this man did, standing tall with huge silver wings at his back.
My ancestors' blood runs strong in me, said Iskar, but his eyes flicked downward. I was glad to help, Mr. Carver, but perhaps we can speak of this later.
Tane had questions, but he let it pass. The man had saved them, and he was right. There were more important things at hand.
Right. No time to waste. Where are we, exactly?
Edge of Stukton, by Griffin's Roost,
Kadka said.
We're close, then.
Tane jabbed two fingers at Kadka and Indri.
You two need to get to the Audlian estate right away. The mask usually strikes after most of the manor is asleep, and Endo doesn't know we're free.
If he thinks he can afford to bide his time, we might still have a chance to stop him.
Endo?
Kadka cocked her head.
He is part of this?
It's him, Kadka, Tane said. He's the mask. Or he built the mask. It's a golem. Kadka's eyes widened, but she accepted the revelation without argument.
Explains why it doesn't stop your trail.
She pointed to the dark ink stain down the side of Tane's trousers.
Only does what spells say to, yes?
Exactly, said Tane. And its instructions right now are to kill Failure Audlion. Tonight. Endo sent it out near an hour ago.
I just sent to Durin for backup, Indri said, a distant look in her eye. Even he's not stubborn enough to ignore us if I give him my memory of Endo confessing. But if we're at the edge of the roost, we're closer to the Audlion estate than the yard is.
Should move fast, then, said Kadka. Have to do something with mages upstairs. They will wake soon.
The Silver Dawn can deal with them, Iskar offered. Our agents will secure this place until the constabulary can arrive. I'll see it done. You three get where you need to go.
Wait.
Indri's cheeks went red when she looked Tane in the eye. He felt his do the same, but she didn't let the embarrassment stop her.
Us two. You didn't say three. You said us two.
Tane nodded. It's probably going to be a fight if you catch the mask, and I'm useless against him, and they'll never let Kadka in alone. You're going to need your badge to get in. It has to be you two.
That's not what I'm asking, Indri said, and now there was a hint of concern in her voice. Where are you going?
Tane gathered his nerve. His fingers went to the brass watch case in his pocket. Well, he said, somebody needs to have a talk with Endo. Chapter 23
So, what is plan?
Kadka asked, as she and Indri hurried down the street toward the Audlion estate. It sat atop a hill at the end of Riverview Avenue, a massive manor looking down over the surrounding city, isolated by a tall iron fence. The protective detail that had swarmed the grounds in previous days had thinned to a pair of guards on the gate and a few patrols across the property, visible in the dark by the light of their lanterns. Endo's machinations had done their job. With Noana Uthar and her son in custody, the Senate houses felt safe lowering their guard. Indri spoke between breaths, easily matching Katka's quick pace.
Backup is on its way, she said. They're already at the Stook House, but we're further from the yard here, and we can't afford to wait. We'll go straight in. We might be able to evacuate the Audlians to protective custody before the mask attacks. If not, we'll hold him. It off as best we can.
Her hand went to the empty holster where her pistol usually hung. She'd given it to Carver when they'd parted. It wouldn't do any good against a golem. But Kadka recognized the nervous instinct.
Won't get past us,
Kadka said as confidently as she could. She didn't bring up that the mask had beaten her once already.
I almost believe that, coming from you, said Endri. You seem to have a habit of improbable rescues. I'm glad you're here.
You too. Seen you fight before.
Kadka grinned a forced grin, but just doing it made her feel a little bit better.
Your magic and my muscle. Can't lose.
Indri didn't look entirely convinced, but she nodded.
I just hope we're not already too late.
They were nearly at the gates now, and the guard stepped forward to meet them, two elven men in Audlion blue and gold.
What business do you have here?
One man asked. Indri produced her badge.
Constable Inspector Indri Lovio, the Audlians are in danger. You're going to tell Dalia Audlion we're here, and then you're going to let us through that gate.
Neither guardsman was stupid enough to mistake the tone in her voice. Kadka admired the authority Indri could project when she needed to.
One moment, Inspector Lovio,
the elf who had spoken first said.
I'll notify the family.
Less than a minute later, they were through the gates, running up the hill toward the manor. The guards at the door had already been notified to let Kadka and Indri in without delay. They passed through the doors and into a vast foyer with a stark marble floor and a pair of symmetrical curving stairways at the far end that led up to the second floor landing. It seemed a waste to Kadka, like most of the giant manor houses she'd seen the past few days. She lived in a cramped room in Porthaven that would have fit in this space four times over, and she'd grown up in Svernan longhouses where every inch had a purpose. This was just pointless emptiness to pass through. Dalia Audlion waited inside, just before the stairs. Or at least Katka assumed it was Dahlia Audlian. She'd never met the woman. An older elf with a simple robe wrapped around her body, she looked as if she'd just been going to bed, or perhaps just awoken. She wore no ornament or jewelry, and her long gray hair was unbound and unbrushed, but even so she had the dignified bearing of a powerful woman. An elven man stood beside her in a silken nightrobe, his blonde hair rumpled and messy. He appeared far less collected than she did, and far more annoyed. Four guards stood with them, two on either side.
"What is the meaning of this?"
the man beside Dahlia demanded, rubbing bleary eyes.
"Do you know what time it is?"
Dahlia frowned at him.
"You're being rude, Salus. Inspector Lovial was instrumental in bringing down Talayn Nieris, and if I'm not mistaken, this is Katka of the Magebreakers. I'm inclined to trust that they wouldn't trouble us without good reason."
She faced Indri and Katka.
"Forgive my cousin. He's always grumpy when he wakes. I'm told you believe we're in danger." "I know it for a fact, Senator," said Indri. "I was taken captive by the Mask tonight, and he told me himself that he means to kill your nephew. We need to check on Faelir right now."
"Taken captive by the... But the Mask was arrested. How could you..."
Salus Audlian was still sputtering when his cousin cut him off. Dahlia pointed at the pair of guards on her right.
"You two, join the men on the front door. And tell the others we may have an intruder on the grounds. I want everyone on alert. The rest of you, come with me."
And then the head of House Audlian hiked her robe above her knees, turned, and sprinted for the main stairway. Straight to action. Katka respected that. They stopped at a door on the second floor. Dahlia reached it first, and she was already calling her nephew's name as she turned the handle.
"Faelir?"
Katka tensed, half expecting to see the huge silhouette of the Mask standing over the bed, crown spike in hand. She'd be ready for him this time, she hoped. Her hand slipped behind her back to grasp the hilt of her knife. Beside her, she heard Indri muttering magical words under her breath. The door swung open. Light spilled into the darkened bedroom. There was no one inside except a young elf man, sitting up in bed and blinking at the sudden brightness from the hall.
"Aunt Dahlia? What's going on?"
Indri answered first.
"We have reason to believe an attempt is going to be made on your life, Senator Audlian."
It seemed every one of these elves was a senator of some sort.
"We need to get you into protective custody at Stookton Yard as soon as possible. Get dressed, quickly."
She ushered everyone out of the room and closed the door. Not all the way, just enough to give Faelir some privacy. Then turned to Dahlia.
"I assume you have a coach of some sort? I'd suggest we get your family on it with an escort of guardsmen and get you away from here as quickly as possible. There are more constables coming, but we can meet them on the way. The Mask is going to come looking for Faelir here, and your wards won't stop him. The sooner we're off the grounds, the better."
"Whatever you think necessary, Inspector Lovial,"
said Dahlia. Her eyes went unfocused for a moment.
"I've sent for the carriage to be brought around, and called back the guards patrolling the grounds. That should be sufficient escort."
Faelir stepped into the hall, still blinking against the light. He was a young man, at least by elf standards. He looked about Carver's age, although Katka knew he had to be in his sixth decade, if not older. He had fair hair like his father and sharp, solemn features. And, apparently, he was the first magicless elf born to a senate house in more than 100 years, although that seemed to Katka a curious thing to care so much about.
"Is someone going to explain this to me?"
he asked.
"The Mask is coming," said Indri. "If you want more details, you can have them on the way. Come on."
They marched quickly back down the stairs and through the foyer, Katka and Indri in the lead, the Audlians behind them, and two guardsmen at the rear. Indri paused for a moment just before the big front doors and turned to face the others.
"Once we walk through these doors, we don't stop until we reach Stookton Yard. If you feel like slowing down, I suggest you remember that the Mask won't. Any questions?"
There weren't any.
"Good," said Indri. "Katka, take the lead. If we run into trouble, I'll need space to get my spells off."
Katka pushed open the heavy double doors with both hands. She was just in time to watch the last of the guards fall. A hooded giant in a black robe stood over a half dozen prone bodies, holding a crowned spike of solid bronze in one hand. A faceless brass mask turned toward the door, and silver-blue eye slits found Faelir Audlian's face. The mask advanced in utter silence. Katka's knives were in her hand at once, but instead of attacking, she backed off a step and tried to recall everything Carver had told her about automatons, any weakness she might exploit. All she could come up with were strengths. It would implacably follow whatever instruction it had been given, so there was no intimidating it, no scaring it off. It was strong and tireless and lacked any vital organs for her knives to find. It was made of brass, which would dampen the effects of spells. The metal wasn't strictly magic-proof, as far as she understood it, but no spell could pass through, which considerably dulled the impact of any attack Indri might make. It had artifacts that let it mimic spells of its own without even needing the words. She didn't know what victory against this thing even looked like, and it had already beaten her once. Indri spoke several sharp, fast syllables in the language of magic, and silver-blue energy encircled the mask, clasping massive arms to its sides.
"Get them somewhere safe!"
she shouted over her shoulder to the two guardsmen left behind. Katka heard retreating footsteps behind her, but she didn't look back. There was no time left for hesitation. She couldn't let Indri do this alone. With a running leap, she launched herself at the mask. The golem strained against Indri's spell, and the silver energy stretched and thinned. It wouldn't hold long. Knives weren't going to do much, but strength could. Katka grabbed the mask's arms in a bear hug just above waist level, as high as she could reach, and gripped tight, hoping to give Indri a chance to bolster her magic. As long as they kept it bound, they were buying the Audlians time to escape. It worked. For a moment. The combined might of Indri's spell and Kadka's grip held the mask's arms in place at its sides, kept the artifacts in its hands from finding targets. And then, in the corner of her eye, she saw a silver-blue flash. The mask discharged a torrent of silver force from its left hand, directly at the ground beneath their feet. The strength of it tore Kadka's grip free, threw her up and away to land hard on the ground in front of the doors. The mask hardly moved at all. Its size and weight and brass construction absorbed the bulk of the impact. Eyes still blurry and unfocused from the fall, Katka pushed herself up on one arm, watched as the mask shattered Indri's spell with a powerful surge of its arms. The golem barreled forward, crossing the distance in huge strides. Katka rolled aside to avoid being trampled, and Indri spun out of the way at the last moment. The Audlians and their guards were on the second floor landing now, at least, with a decent head start. Or so Katka thought. Until the mask jumped. It reached the center of the foyer, bent its knees, and sprang into the air. Glyphs on the bottoms of its feet flared, and the golem soared into the air, impossibly high, arcing toward the second floor balcony. It was only then that Katka remembered Endo mentioning the apparently groundbreaking levitation spells he'd woven into his chair. So now they were fighting an unstoppable golem who could all but fly. The mask landed lightly on the balcony, with almost no sound. The guards moved to block its advance, short swords drawn. It simply stowed its spike at its waist, grabbed one man in each hand, and lifted them off the ground as their blades rang harmlessly off brass. Neither of them went limp, though. The dazing artifacts that the golem had used to kidnap Carver and Indri apparently weren't in play. That was something. Tane had said that the power drain on those was substantial, perhaps too much to sustain for a longer fight. With almost casual ease, the mask threw both men over its shoulders and off the edge of the landing. They struck marble with a sickening crunch. From the first floor, Indri was chanting another spell. And as she finished, a shield of translucent silver spanned the mouth of the hall at the top of the stairs, separating the golem from the Audlians.
"Move, Katka! It won't hold long!"
Katka pushed herself up and ran for the stairs, climbing them three at a time. The mask pounded huge fists against the magical barrier again and again. She leapt onto its back and wrapped her arms around its neck just as the barrier shattered. Her weight made next to no difference. The golem drew its bronze spike once more and strode down the hall after the fleeing family, carrying Katka like she was nothing. She might as well have been for all she was doing to slow this thing down. They weren't going to be able to beat the mask this way, not with muscle or force. Which meant she needed to find another way, If there was a flaw in all magic, like Carver always said, she had to find it. The mask caught up to the Audlians all too quickly, but it had no eyes for anyone but failure. It bowled past Dahlia and Salis, grabbed the young elf, shoved him against the wall. Failure raised his hand.